Thanks for calling Toyota. This is Jan.
I just adopted a new best friend, and I'm looking for a Toyota so we can make the most out of summer.
With a new RAV4, you can take your pup for a drive up the coast. You can take a Prius to the park, or you can take a Tundra to kayak at a remote lake.
One problem, Jan.
Oh?
My new best friend's a cat.
Your summer starts here, but it all ends June 3rd. Toyota, let's go places. Dealer inventory may vary. See your participating Toyota dealer for details.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
What's up, y'all? We are back with another edition of the DNVR Rams podcast. Hope everybody had an eventful weekend. There was a lot going on with the NFL draft, obviously. We're going to dive into that. Mo Camara-Lance with the Dolphins goes later in the draft than I expected, but I'll talk about why I'm excited about it, why I have a little bit of reservation as well, but we'll get into all that. I'll talk about Dallin Holker landing with the Saints, Chigozie Anuzium landing with the Washington Commanders. Will get into the Mountain West kind of having a down year in terms of draft totals and whether the transfer portal is something that is going to consistently negatively impact the league. I'm not sure we have a large enough sample size yet, but I'll get into all of that. Real quick here at the beginning, if you missed the live show on Thursday, I just wanted to give a brief update on CSU men's basketball. Kyle Evans has committed to UC Irvine. A good landing spot for him. I think he has a chance to be pretty dominant for them, honestly. Has a chance to be closer to home. Tavy Jackson commits to Southern Utah. Another situation where I feel like he has an opportunity to really play at a high level. Stinks that injuries were a part of the conversation during his time at CSU. Certainly limited, probably, the impact that he was able to make this past season, along with some other circumstances that were just out of his control. A lot more veterans being on the roster than he would have anticipated after kind of a breakout freshman season. But I think he has a chance in the WAC to really kind of do his thing. So I'm rooting for him. I did want to give some credit to the CSU women's basketball program and Ryan Williams specifically. I was pretty critical of just the shortcomings that I felt like CSU had this past season. I understand UNLV was just insane. I'm not sure winning the league would have been that realistic, even with McKenna back, but I felt like they should have finished second. Just felt like they kind of came up short consistently throughout the season, came on strong at the end and, you know, fought valiantly, but I wanted to see them have a little more success in McKenna Hofschild's last season. That said, they really reloaded the roster in a major way. Bringing in Emma Ronsick is such a massive recruiting win for the program. From what I've heard, you know, she got offered six figures to come to South Carolina. So that's impressive for CSU to be able to land her. And honestly, to keep her sister, Hannah, too, very easily could have been a situation where she got lured into the portal and kind of brought in by a bigger program. Then all of a sudden, Hannah and Emma are, you know, maybe playing for USC or, you know, some other big program. So I think CSU has a chance to be quite good this next season. I'm really looking forward to it. I just wanted to make sure that I was fair. You know, I'm critical when I think that things need to be criticized. And, you know, in this kind of situation where you have such a big win, I want to make sure that I'm highlighting that as well, because this really is a monster move for the CSU women's program going into a really pivotal year. So big time stuff happening. Really looking forward to that season. We're going to move on. We're going to dive into the NFL draft takeaways, talk about Mo landing with Miami, Dallin Holker going down to New Orleans, Chigozie Anuzium signing with the Washington Commanders. Real quick, I do want to shout out our friends over at the Circa Sportsbook. Circa is all about transparency. They do not limit their players based on their winnings. Every player has the same limits, unlike other books who do limit player winnings. They strive to give you minus 110 splits, where other books might hit you with minus 115, minus 20. And Circa Sports keeps as little money as possible on large market bets. Examples include futures, golf tournaments, etc. There's so many great things about Circa, but one of the things that I really applaud them for is the fact that it's real people behind the brand. They have real people who can resolve your issues in a timely fashion. So many other books are using chatbots these days. It's a disaster. All aspects of the Circa Sportsbook app are being run by the same team that runs the main Circa Sportsbook at the Circa Resort and Casino in Vegas. And we all know how I feel about the Circa Resort and Casino. It's heaven on earth. Download the app at circasports.com. Circa Sports bets can be made while physically located in the state of Colorado. Must be 21 or older. All rights reserved. Circa Sports Colorado encourages you to gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call or text 1-800-GAMBLER or visit problemgamblingcolorado.org. On your mark, get set, eat. Make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable hand-battered chicken fingers. They're always cooked to order and made just for you. Race in for delicious chicken finger meals served up fast. Order up chicken fingers, crispy crinkle-cut fries, and buttery Texas toast. And don't forget about the creamy coleslaw and secret cane sauce. Find your local Raising Cane's location or order on mobile or online. For cook-to-order, hand-battered chicken fingers, race in to Raising Cane's. Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster by ordering online at RaisingCane's.com or through the mobile app Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers. One love. Cool, cool, cool. Now that we've paid the bills, let's get into it. Saturday was kind of a stressful day for me. I was on I-25 for a lot of it. It was whiteout conditions. Exciting news, though. I think I found a place in Fort Collins to move back to. Cannot wait to be back up in FOCO full time. That's going to be so much easier. But I'm trying to follow the NFL draft the whole time. I keep assuming that I have missed Mo being picked. We get to the beginning of the fifth round, still hasn't been selected. And I was losing my mind. The fact that he fell all the way to the fifth round, pick number 158 to Miami, is really surprising to me. I get he's a little bit undersized based on, you know, traditional prototypes, but his production, his RAS scores, everything lined up with him having a really strong opportunity to be a day two pick. I thought he would go in the third round. Really, like, I thought if he went late second, it wouldn't have even been that surprising. And based on everything I read in the pre-draft process, there were a lot of people, Daniel Jeremiah, Mel Kiper, that felt very similarly. Kiper on a SportsCenter segment this morning said that he thought that Mo was the best pick, the best steal of day three. Look, in the end, if Mo produces, if he does the right things, he's going to play on Sundays. He's going to have a nice career. I feel pretty confidently in that. I think he's definitely going to go in with a chip on his shoulder. Reading some of the quotes that he told for the local Miami press was pretty classic Mo. He's always been a guy that wears his heart on his sleeve. Listen to some of these quotes, though. I'm very excited, but I'm also very, very angry going the round that I did. That's just my personality. I knew I could have went higher and I wanted to go higher, but the lovely team of Miami picked me up and I'm going to give them that burning desire. I have a chip on my shoulder, so it just got even greater. He went on to say, if you call me short, watch out. If you didn't believe in me, watch out. That's just the type of person I am. That's what keeps me going every day. I'm never going to be satisfied. All 31 other teams, look out, because the way I'm about to play against these guys, you should have picked me before. That's just the type of person I am. So I have respect to those guys, and I'm grateful for Miami picking me up. But I know what I'm going to bring to the field, and every other team has to see me. I love the energy that Mo's going into Miami with. I love that he's bringing all the smoke, and I know that certain people might hear those quotes and think that Mo is trying to, I don't know, play a character, or, you know, some guys you hear things like that, and it's just lip service. It's just saying what they know you want to hear. Mo is always his authentic self, so... For him to go out and kind of lay it all on the line that way is not surprising at all to me. The guy says what's on his mind, and he's going to be very popular with the Miami media. I think he'll be pretty popular in that locker room, too, just the type of effort that you know he's going to bring to the table. One of the most relentless players that I have ever covered. I certainly wish that he would have landed with my Broncos. They had an opportunity to take him in the fifth and didn't. I wasn't surprised after they took Jonah Ellis earlier on. Another guy who I'm pretty high on, but it was kind of a dagger to the heart because Jonah Ellis on the draft pod is a guy who I have hyped up for 2 years now, and I'm excited that he's a Bronco, but it kind of made it clear that the chances of Mo being in the orange and blue were not going to be very high. Ultimately falls to the Dolphins. I'm interested to see how it plays out. I mean, I'm really excited that he'll have at least 1 year to learn under Shaq Barrett, signed a 1 year deal with the Dolphins as a free agent after a really nice run with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. From a CSU fan's perspective, that's the biggest win of this, is those two kind of two generational pass rushers getting to play together. It feels like Kane and Undertaker coming together if you were an old school WWF fan, or maybe it's kind of like a Batman and Robin situation where you have this legend who's established and now you have the up and comer who can kind of go under his wing and learn what it's all about. I'm sure that Shaq will have tons of great insight in terms of what it's like being a guy who gets overlooked a little bit and has to prove his way into this league. I mean, Shaq's story is incredible, going from a guy that went undrafted and was really overlooked to, you know, winning a Super Bowl and ultimately getting paid, you know, having a ton of success, being an all-pro at the Buccaneers, got paid again by the Dolphins. I mean, there really isn't a better mentor-mentee situation, especially because you know that Shaq is genuinely going to have his back as a CSU guy. That's not always the case. I mean, Shaq's getting up there in years, signing he got a nice deal with Miami, but it's kind of like a 1 year prove it deal that you've still kind of got that next level after getting hurt. A lot of guys in that situation could be kind of selfish and they don't want to necessarily help someone who's coming into the league and kind of, you know, basically trying to take their job. I just don't see a world in which Shaq is not a great resource for Mo and probably for Chop Robinson as well. If we're pointing out the negatives of the situation, along with it being a crowded room, maybe having less opportunities to get on the actual field because of those other established guys and because of the fact that they invested a first round pick in Chop Robinson, you know, you could just be the victim of basically roster politics. We've seen that happen to Shaq in Denver. We've seen it happen to Rashard in Cleveland, where even though Rashard proved to have nice chemistry with Baker, made the most of his opportunities, they kept giving guys that were drafted higher more chances than him. With Shaq, he right away was a better player, more consistent producer than Shane Ray, but because Shane Ray was a second round pick, he just kept getting chances over and over again. Mo will certainly have to prove beyond a doubt that he belongs in this league. Now, I don't have any doubts about his ability to do so. I think landing with Mike McDaniel is great, a total players coach, and the fact that they got Vic Fangio out of there, who's a great defensive coordinator, but not exactly a players guy, didn't really focus on player development. That seems to be kind of what got him out of the picture from what I've read. They ultimately bring in Anthony Weaver. He comes over from Baltimore. Player development seems to be like his number one priority. McDaniel, in a quote when he was introduced back in February, said he has a proven resume of success built on his personal investment in his players. Most importantly, he shares our belief that player development is the cornerstone to both team building and sustained excellence. Through conversations with him and those who have worked with him, it became clear that we have aligned values in football and philosophies in coaching. Everything that I have been able to find so far, on paper at least, is a positive indicator that Mo is going into a situation where they are really going to emphasize some of these young guys. They're not going to have to deal with some of the politics and the stupid stuff that, frankly, a lot of older crotchety coaches can tend to lean on. So I'm excited. I will be interested to see what the scheme looks like, because when Weaver was in Houston, it was mostly a 4-3, but in Baltimore, they were running more of a 3-3-5. I do think a lot of that has to do with the versatility of some of the guys they had in the secondary as well at linebacker. I'm interested to see how much they blitz as well, because again, they were pretty blitz heavy in Houston over 20% of the time. But when Weaver was in Baltimore, they were only blitzing 18% of the time, which is not very often. That could be tougher. Again, you know, for a young guy, probably going to mostly be playing in pass rush situations. You want him to get on the field. all things considered, I would say that despite sliding, which is a bummer for sure, just wanted him to get validated after having such an awesome season. But all things considered, I think Miami is a good landing spot for him. I think it's a spot he has a chance to have success. I feel the same way about Dallin Holker signing with New Orleans and Chigoze Anuzium signing with the Washington Commanders. We're going to get into that. Real quick, I did want to talk to you guys about Fubo TV with 140 plus live channels of sports shows, movies, and news. Fubo is a great option. It's the best way to watch the most Colorado sports for the lowest price. You can start watching immediately. No contract, no cable, no hassle. Just sign up and start watching. The Colorado Rockies are on Fubo all season long. You can get the NFL Network. You can get CBS Sports Network, FS1, FS2, all of that stuff. Watch all your favorite sports, including the Rockies, with Fubo. Go to FuboTV.com/DNVR to sign up and get 15% off your first month of Fubo Pro. Between work, social media, and the choices life throws our way, it's no wonder that we're more worked up. Coors Light celebrates rising above and choosing a chill mindset. Why not turn a rained-out barbecue into a karaoke house party? Or after a tough loss, settle scores with an ice-cold peace offering. Make the choice to choose chill, then reach for a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment. I love kicking back, having an ice-cold silver bullet while watching a game. I love sitting out on a deck or in a backyard and having a couple of brews with the boys. It's just perfect. It's great when I know I'm just going to have a chill night. I decide, you want to know what? Tonight's about me. I'm just going to kick back. I'm going to relax. And then I crack open an ice-cold Coors Light. Make the most out of the times you choose to chill. Choose Coors Light. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/DNVR. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. All right, let's talk about Dallin Holker signing with the Saints and why I think it is such a good situation for him. Again, would have loved to have seen him land with the Broncos. I think they certainly could use more production at the position. No guarantees that Dulcich is going to be able to produce after the injury situation. Could have used a guy that could score in the red zone. I mean, there's a lot of reasons I would have loved to bring him in, especially with a young quarterback. But the nice thing about Dallin going to New Orleans is it's not a situation where he's going into a loaded room. We talked about that with Mo in Miami and Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb and Shaq and now Chop Robinson. That's a lot of competition. New Orleans, they bring a couple of guys back. Technically, they're two leading receivers at the position from a year ago. But Juwan Johnson, he had 37 catches for 398 yards, 4 touchdowns last year, 15 touchdowns over the last 4. That's nothing that makes you shake in your boots. Nobody else really did much of anything, like 20 catches, 200 yards, a touchdown. Just not a ton of production. I feel like Holker should have a pretty good opportunity to play his way onto the team, much like the coaching situation in Miami. I love the coaching situation that he's going to in New Orleans, at least at the offensive coordinator. Clint Kubiak was brought in from San Francisco, former CSU guy. You got to think he's going to do right by a Ram. Again, I know it sounds silly, but the Kubiaks really do have a history of doing right by CSU players in the league. If you look at what Gary did in Houston and Denver with guys like Joel Dreesen, I brought in David Anderson. I mean, there were multiple examples. Obviously, this is still the NFL. I'm not saying that Kubiak would risk his position with the team or get himself in a tight spot simply to do right by a Ram, but I would like to think that he would give him plenty of opportunities to succeed. And on top of that, I love that, I mean, one, with Gary's background and what he did in Denver and Houston all those years, and Clint learning under him and working in Denver as well. And then going to San Francisco, an offense that very heavily utilized tight ends and George Kittle, you know, I'd like to think that they could find some creative ways to get the ball into the hands of a guy like Dallin who can, you know, be impactful from multiple areas of the field. I don't really envision him ever being a mauler of a blocker the same way that Kittle is, but I do think you could line him up in the backfield a little bit and do some play action stuff and get him the ball that way. I think you can flex him out wide. I do think you can have him in line just like a traditional tight end and, you know, get the ball in the middle of the field and underneath to him that way. He's got soft hands. He's shown the ability to make contested catches. He shows a nice understanding of using open space and finding ways to get open, especially when it's a situation where he needs to break off the route and kind of improvise a little bit. I mean, Dallin does a ton right. He's not a guy that's going to like blow you away at the combine, the underwear Olympics or anything like that. But he feels like a classic example of, have you actually watched him play football? And when he's on the football field, he's pretty damn good. Really excited to see where he lands in New Orleans or how he performs in New Orleans. Think it's a good landing spot. So a little surprised he didn't get drafted, but that's how this process goes. As far as Chigozie Anuzium and Washington goes, I got a nice little guarantee, six figures. That's the funny thing about undrafted free agents. A lot of them make more money off the bat than even a seventh or sixth round pick. Feels like he'd fit in pretty well under Dan Quinn. I am interested to see, is it more like Dallas where you're really aggressive, you're rushing the passer, you're playing a lot of man, or is it more like Seattle where it's a lot of zone and cover three? Chiggy obviously has quite a bit of man experience at CSU under Freddie Banks. It was a lot of man defense, kind of a mixed bag in terms of the success that he had. But I do feel like he's an NFL corner in terms of body type. I believe he ran a 4.38 during the pre-draft process, so he tested well. Feels, at least in terms of just stylistically, he feels like one of those lanky quarters that would have succeeded in the Legion of Boom under Dan Quinn. We'll see kind of what happens there, but I really do think he's going to have a good opportunity to make a roster, if maybe not this year, maybe down the line, maybe, you know, start on the practice squad. We'll see. I really thought that at least one of Dallin or Chigozie would get drafted. I'll be honest, that was surprising to me. In terms of whether this was a bad year for the Mountain West, they only had two players selected, both day three, Mo Camara, and then Trey Taylor goes to the Raiders. That's a guy who I'm not stoked to play against, by the way. I love Trey Taylor. But only having two players drafted on the surface is certainly not a great look for the Mountain West, especially when they're only day three picks. There were three other players, in all fairness, that played the majority of their career at Mountain West institutions before being poached by a Power 5 school for 1 or 2 years. Then they went pro. Evan Williams at Oregon, started at Fresno State. Solomon Bird, the edge. Actually, we recruited him too. He started at Wyoming before going to USC. Patrick McMorris was a standout at San Diego State for multiple seasons before going to Cal this past year. All those guys got drafted. You could claim them as Mountain West guys, especially when you're watching the draft with a guy like Patrick McMorris and they say at a Cal, and then every single highlight they showed is him in an Aztecs uniform. The reason that I brought all this up, though, is just I think that it can be easy to jump to certain conclusions based on the results from this one cycle. It is clear that the portal had a negative impact on the Mountain West draft result in 2024. That's fair to say. It's also important to point out that, you know, some of the best NFL prospects in the conference from this past year are still in the Mountain West, and Torrey Horton and Ashton Gienti of Boise State. Wyoming's got, you know, a nice situation in the backfield as well. There's some guys that are going to play in the league, and all of them are coming back, which is encouraging because I think under previous years, you know, or under previous rules, those guys would all be going pro this year, but they have an opportunity to make money and to come back and to potentially play their way into higher rounds. So some of this can be good. You know, I think even for me, you know, I've had a lot of complaints about the portal, about NIL, and I think a lot of it is unsustainable. I also think it's important to recognize that it is keeping certain guys in school longer. And when you're able to hang on to them as a Mountain West school, that's a huge win. It's very possible that after having nobody go in the first three rounds this year, you have two, three guys go in the first three rounds next year. I think the Mountain West is going to have a really nice draft, you know, this next season. I think we need a little bit larger of a sample size before we just say that the transfer portal is going to be the death of the Mountain West in the NFL conversation. I just don't think that's going to be the case. And the funny thing is, as much as we fixate on the NFL draft, it obviously is a huge part in roster building. It's a huge event. So many guys are undrafted free agents and end up being starters in the NFL. In 2023 alone, 11% of the starters in week one were undrafted players. Between 2019 and 2023, 12% of all starters were undrafted players. That's more than 400 total players. These stats courtesy of Yahoo. There's a path forward for so many of these guys, for the Dallin Holkers of the world, for Frank Crum coming out of Wyoming. He signed with the Broncos. I think he has a nice chance to make the team. My biggest point in all of this is just that there's a lot more nuance to this conversation than you're going to get out of a tweet or a graphic that's just like, only two Mountain West players selected. It's like, okay, but why are the reasons that was the case? And there's a lot that goes into it. Anyways, that's my two cents on this whole situation. My thoughts on the 2024 NFL draft. Certainly excited for the Rams in the league. I saw a report that Ron Harge might get a chance with the Broncos as well. So could be a couple other guys that play their way onto rosters in the coming weeks. I'll give you updates with it all. Hopefully we get some transfer news that's positive on the basketball side here, on the men's basketball side. Tons of off-season content coming your way, a lot of recruiting talk. We'll have a lot of guests. It's going to be fun. Much love, y'all. Always proud to be. Peace.
With the cuff khakis, wearing graphic tees, feeling way too trendy. Raps that kill, oh, I'm deadly. Primed and ready like machetes at a deli in New Delhi. Feeling scummy like Martin Scorsese. Turn jam into jelly, then drink it like juice. But water's the truth, so I sip on that too. Skinny looking kid with no car keys, like the only thing I drive is RC RVs. Got the stash like Steve Harvey. Oh, I'm gnarly.